Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He is Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, we're in the middle of the week here as the Packers begin preparations for Sunday's game in Cleveland against the Browns. An 0-12 Browns team, obviously trying to avoid becoming the second 0-16 team of the last decade, along with the 2008 Detroit Lions. And we'll talk about Cleveland's defense in the next segment, which is really the strength of their team. But in starting with Cleveland's offense, this has really been the downfall of the squad and why they have not been able to get any wins this year. This is an offense that's really struggled.
It has, and it's been basically predominantly on the quarterback position. Now, certainly you lose Joe Thomas. He's the name there. He's their star, and certainly one of the best to ever do it at the left tackle position. But for so many years, it was obviously bigger than Joe Thomas. There's a reason why he's 11, 12 years into his career yet and never been to a playoff appearance. This particular group of quarterbacks that they have, DeShone Kizer being the one that's getting the most playing time, the second-round pick out of Notre Dame. Kevin Hogan saw a few snaps. Cody Kessler from a year ago, one of their draft picks, is still in that equation. They've just really struggled to find stability at that spot. Thing that's interesting about it, I mean, by no means are they quote-unquote good offense, but 24th in the league in total yards, 19th in rushing, 23rd in passing yards. The number that stands out the most, though, is 32nd in points scored, 14.7 points per game. As you and I were just talking about before we started the show, a lot of that has to do with turnovers in their own red when they have red zone opportunities. Kizer has 20 turnovers this year and 11 starts. So it's been a struggle, as you said, and trying to find weapons for him. Josh Gordon obviously is back in the equation now, but overall, it's just not been enough execution.
Yeah, and it's interesting because their defense has been solid enough that, you know, even as much as the offense has struggled, there have been a lot of games they didn't need a lot in order to get a victory. They've lost four games by just 3 points apiece. I remember seeing some of the game against Minnesota over in London where, you know, they were right with the Vikings well into the second half before Minnesota pulled away in the fourth quarter. The game in Detroit against Ford Field, you talk about the miscues in the red zone. They scored 24 points in that game, but they had opportunities for a lot more, particularly at the end of the first half when they you know, you could say they could have taken control of that game in a sense and really put the squeeze on the Lions to try to get the victory there. So a lot of struggles. DeShone Kizer obviously learning the position, coming from Notre Dame, a young quarterback, athletic guy. The biggest, I guess, storyline of this Cleveland Browns offense, though, now as we are in December and into the final month of the season, is that wide receiver Josh Gordon is back after multiple years out of the NFL for suspensions, drug offenses, all sorts of things. I don't need to go through the entire litany of things, but he comes back after an extremely long layoff, makes a couple of big plays against the Los Angeles Chargers.
Catch yourself.
Last week, ended up with four receptions for around 80-plus yards. This guy's a playmaker, and he's going to be someone the Packers have to deal with.
You know, his situation in some ways almost reminds me of Johnny Jolly when he came back in 2013. Totally different situation as far as their off-the-field stuff, but the fact that he's been out of the game for 3 years, Mike, and yet he's still, I believe, only 26 years old, and he looked really good in that first contest. You expect to see rust. You expect to see a guy that has not played organized football in that amount of time struggle to get back into a groove. He had four catches for 85 yards, and there are a lot of pundits out there. I don't know if you followed this national conversation, but there's a lot of pundits that said he would have easily had over 100 yards, 150 yards, if more passes were online for him. There was some erratic throws there that really eliminated some downfield opportunities as well.
And Kizer attempted, I believe it was 32 passes in that game. 11 of the targets were for Josh Gordon. He was trying to get the guy the football.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, because they made no secret about this. I mean, it was out there before the game that they were going to target Gordon and really try to get him some opportunities. Listen, they have to figure out what they have in this guy. You go back to 2013, he was a Pro Bowler, a 1,600-yard receiver in this league. Think about that for a second. We just got done talking about the issues that the Browns have had at quarterback over the years and, you know, different guys moving in and out. Josh Gordon had 1,600 yards receiving. So, I mean, since the day he came out of college and he was drafted in the second round of the supplemental draft, the Browns know the talent that they're getting. If he can take, you know, and make an improvement and steer clear of some of the things that have sort of derailed his career to this point, This guy is as talented as receivers come, and the Packers have to be ready for him.
Yeah, you look at where this Browns team is right now with getting Josh Gordon back. Last week, they went up against one of the hottest teams in the NFL in the Chargers.
Yeah.
We saw the Chargers tear up the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving. And then that Chargers team, you know, has the mini bye, the extra rest and everything like that. Then they come out for a home game against Cleveland. Final score, Wes, 19-10.
Right.
I mean, that speaks to Cleveland's defense, which we'll get to in our next segment, but also that this Browns team, especially with Josh Gordon on the field on offense, they can hang with anybody. This 0-12 record, frankly, it means even less, I think, than any other situation in which I've seen an 0-12 record on a team in December. This is not an 0-12 team in my view of it.
And that's why when Mike McCarthy said on Monday, Mike, when we were talking about the distractions of this week, I mean, Aaron Rodgers certainly being back at practice running the scout team is a part of that. But it's also not looking past the Browns. I mean, yeah. In some ways, it's interesting. I think every team that faces them the rest of the way, so long as they don't have a victory, are actually under some pretty good amount of pressure to not be the team that gives up the win. Certainly, they were able to get off, you know, and get that win late last season to avoid the 0-16 record. But they're playing hard still, and it's going to be something to watch going into this one.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about getting to that defense of the Browns, and we will do that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, moving on to the Cleveland Browns defense. This is the strength of this team. This is a legitimate top 10 defense in a lot of statistical categories. And the one that jumps out at me the most is that they are actually number one in the league in yards per rush given up. They're surrendering through these 12 games, yeah. All losses. And when you lose 12 games in a row, you know other teams are running the ball late in games,
right,
to put the game away. They've surrendered only 3.3 yards per carry through three quarters of the season. That's an impressive number, and I think that sets up an interesting matchup here with the Packers, because we know that the formula for success with Brett Hundley is to be able to run the ball and have that offensive balance. The Packers have to find a way to run the football against this defense.
Yeah, you really do, because you don't want to allow those safeties to start creeping in the box and start, you know, having success in that way. You need to be able to break that up. And when you go back to those performances against Detroit, you know, in some of these ways in which they were able to establish the run, a big part of that was being able to take on when the safeties do go into the box and make them, you know, force them into some decisions when Brett Hundley's dropping back and threatening the vertical ball. So
yeah.
This defense, the way that they're constructed, they're a gritty group, to steal a phrase that Mike McCarthy usually likes to use. I think when you look at Schobert, the former Wisconsin player, third in the league right now in tackles, Christian Kirksey, a former teammate of Mike Daniels at Iowa.
Right.
Those two Big Ten linebackers, I think, are as good as they come in terms of just how solid they are. They don't have the name notoriety of your Luke Kuechly's and some of these, you know, bigger name inside backers, but they're both very dynamic players. And with as many tackles as they have this season, I think when you look at how that defensive line has sort of set things up for them, getting them some clean looks, they've taken full advantage of it.
Yeah, and the guy on the defensive line that gets all the attention, obviously, is the number one overall pick in the most recent NFL draft. That's Myles Garrett,
right,
out of Texas A&M. I believe he leads the Browns in sacks.
He
with five, is
correct.
It? He has five sacks on the season. Not a defensive front that has put a ton of pressure on quarterbacks. There's certainly some vulnerabilities in the secondary, which is where the defense has struggled at times in terms of stopping some of the top quarterbacks in the league. But this run defense is what sets it up, and there are games more often than not they've been difficult to score on. It's not like you look at the statistics, excuse me, and you go, oh, they're really good at stopping the run, but they're still giving up 35 points a game. That's
not the case.
This is a team that has held a number of teams to 20 points or less on the season, even though they do have 12 losses.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, two of their last three games, their quarterback actually had more passing yards in the game than the opposition. I think the one exception to that was Phillip Rivers with the performance he had last week when he did need to throw the ball to be able to establish them and pull away in the fourth quarter. The way that this is set up, Myles Garrett's a very talented young man. Certainly, I think nobody can fault the Browns for taking him with the number one overall pick. It was pretty much, you know, set in stone that that was the guy, and you're probably overthinking it if you don't take him.
Right.
Did have an injury that sidelined him for 4 weeks, but he's back, 5 sacks in 7 games. Very dynamic player that, you know, depending on how they line him up, you know, the tackles are going to have to take into account. But the other thing that kind of surprises me a little bit about this defense, certainly you have your Jabril Peppers and some of these younger guys that they've drafted and developed, but they also do have Jason McCourty now. And McCourty, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of how he's doing one-on-one coverage and things of that nature, but, you know, he does have, I believe it's 3 interceptions on the season. One of those returned for a touchdown has also forced 2 fumbles. A very, you know, when you look at in terms of veteran players in this league, I mean, he's one of the best that's done it, and there is a name notoriety to him. So they have found things to hang their hat on defensively, but unfortunately for them, just hasn't equated to wins.
Yeah, and I think when you look at if you're the Cleveland Browns and you're looking at this game against the Packers, like we talked about yesterday, they see a Packers team that's at 500 with a backup quarterback who only has 2 wins as a starter under his belt. And when they look at the film of what was going on against Baltimore, what was going on this past week against Tampa Bay, you have to believe that they are going to set that run defense to shut down Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, whoever it is, and they're going to make Brett Hundley have to make some throws and make some big plays in the passing game before they're really going to respect Green Bay's passing game. I have to believe that's the approach they're going to take defensively, right?
Yeah, and the other thing to keep in mind, too, Schobert and Kirksey, the way they use them, those guys are also involved in the pressure packages as well. Together this season have 7 total sacks. So in some ways, it does kind of remind you of what Pittsburgh was doing, different types of structure of defenses, a 4-3 versus a 3-4. But they will send guys from all sides to get pressure on the quarterback to find ways to try to create opportunities for themselves. Still have not gotten there enough. I think that's been one of the issues, and they've had to play that game of whether or not they're blitzing extra rushers and if they're going to be giving up containment in different areas. But that being said, when they look at what's been happening with Brett Hundley, he's had these ebbs and flows to his game this season. But if you go from that statistical chart, it would show you that he's kind of due based on the way that this thing is played and how he's responded to, you know, performances where he's been under 60 passer rating. So a lot of different factors go into this thing. I think for me, it's really going to come down to the Packers being to establish that run early on and see if they can draw those linebackers in and try to find some gaps in that defense for the passing game.
Yeah, and I think when you look at this from Hundley's perspective, we saw against the Chicago Bears a quick pass early that to Randall Cobb that he broke a tackle and got a 40-plus yard gain, whatever it was. The touchdown pass early to Randall Cobb in Pittsburgh. Those big plays early in the passing game set Brett Hundley up to have a solid performance. And so while, yes, the Packers do need to try to establish the run, and I think they have no choice but to continue to try to find a way to run the ball against this very good run defense, it will come down to Brett Hundley making some plays in the passing game, and if he can make some early, it sets up the entire offense for potentially a balanced, productive day.
Yeah, and if I'm Mike McCarthy and these offensive coaches, the thing I'm really looking for in this contest is trying to get a blend of both your passing game and your run game, because last week the run game was there, it stepped up, they got the read option going, it was great, but you didn't have the pass. A week earlier, they kind of struggled to run the ball at times against Pittsburgh when they started queuing in on that, and then that's what opened up the pass. If you can get both of those things clicking, regardless of who's at quarterback, that's how you get into a rhythm and start peaking at the end of a season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With that, we're going to throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford right here. Wes Hodkiewicz all the way over there. Wes, Dean Lowry, second-year defensive lineman for the Packers, fourth-round pick in 2016 out of Northwestern, the NFC Defensive Player of the Week. Congratulations to Mr. Lowry. Gets a 14-yard sack and obviously the fumble return for a touchdown. A fumble that did not hit the ground, by the way, that he snagged out of midair. And took off the other way, 62 yards for a touchdown. Nice game for Lowry, and he's getting some recognition for
it. Yeah, it's funny because that's one of the reasons why when you and I were up in the press box, we weren't sure if that was going to end up being called an interception just because of the nature of how that play certainly unfolded.
Maybe he'd rather have the interception.
I think Kenny Clark's happy he got the fumble recovery.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so it's going one way or the other. But here's the thing I like about Lowry. He was a guy that I thought really came on in the middle part of last season, started to get more opportunities, and he became more of a factor with the pass rush. When you look at him and Kenny Clark, the Packers made a big investment at that position a year ago. They were changing the tide a little bit on the defensive line, and they were looking for some guys they could really start pairing with Mike Daniels for the future. Not just this season, not just next season, but guys that they could get on a run with to build a core. Almost in some ways does remind you of Ryan Pickett and B.J. Raji and some of the things they were able to do there during the Super Bowl run. Lowry's made a great jump this season because he has natural size and leverage, completely different body type that the Packers have not really had on the defensive front at 6'6 and 296. And I mentioned this during the game too, and the way that they're able to use him, in some ways he can also be kind of that Julius Peppers, you know, elephant type role where you can use him as an end on some of those base packages. You can move him inside, although they obviously didn't do that. They ran with the NASCAR package last weekend. And he's being productive. And with his body type, sometimes it lends itself to a five tech and that's it. But I think Lowry has shown throughout the course of this year he can also be an impactful player as a three technique rusher.
Yeah, we saw him starting to feel his way last year as a rookie and make that transition. He was pretty much a straight up defensive end at Northwestern in the Big Ten in college. The Packers using him as that five technique, as you say, as a defensive end, and then also working him in inside. And I remember talking to him, you know, last year as we saw him start to come on late in the season with a couple of sacks. And then also through the spring this year, he talked about how it really did take a while to learn, you know, what he needed to do inside. Everything hits you quicker. You know, the guards are different body types than the tackles that you're going against on the outside. Things happen faster. There's, it's more of a brawling mentality, on the interior. So he had to adjust to that. And because he has, the Packers have been able to use him in some different roles, and that's been effective. I want to run something by you here, though. That 62-yard fumble return for a touchdown, the longest Packers fumble return for a score since 1998, actually.
Wow.
Do you know who it was in 1998 who had a longer one?
Bonnie Holiday.
That's actually a really good guess.
Yeah.
Keith McKenzie.
Oh.
88 yards against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So anyway, a great stat from the Packers PR staff that I was reading as I was writing the short item on our website for the Defensive Player of the Week. But first Packers defensive player this year to get Player of the Week.
Yeah, and I'm sure Dean Lowry was happy it didn't have to be another yard. By the time he got done with that one, he pretty much had expended all the gas that was left in the tank.
Give him credit for still trying the Lambeau leap, though, though his tank was on empty.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this, too. If I ran 62 yards down the field, now, mind you, I would have to have a much better vertical to get up there than what Dean can with basically another, 10 inches on me. But the fact is that's a long way to run to compose yourself into the jump in the stands. There's only so many Leroy Butlers out there, Mike, and it can be taxing. So, but again, as I joked about in one of the stories I wrote this past week, this is something for him to build on now. If looking for that next turnover generating touchdown play.
Yeah, and he now has four career sacks, two this year, two last year, and we saw last year he got both of his sacks, if I recall, fairly late in the season.
It was.
So if with getting another sack this past week, maybe he's coming on. We'll see see what happens to that
Definitely. Sack
total between now and the end of the year. But before we go to a break, Wes, today's a perfect day to fill up with some new Campbell's Chunky Max soup. Chunky Max is loaded with more meat than you can handle, a lot more. We're talking 40% more than a comparable chunky soup. So go on, fill up with Campbell's Chunky Max soup. Campbell's Chunky Soup, the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, quickly before we go, I want to follow up on something that we talked about last week, and that was when we were discussing HaHa Clinton Dix and his comments to a group of reporters that included me about how, the ball isn't coming his way. He feels like, he's jumping routes. He's on top of things, and quarterbacks are making different decisions, and that's one of the reasons that his big plays are down. And I wanted to point out, I did a segment, my What You Might Have Missed segment, looking at some different video of all seven of the Packers' sacks against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this past weekend. And on two of those, you could actually see very, very clearly HaHa Clinton-Dix is the safety help against Mike Evans, the number one target for Tampa Bay. And one time on a corner route, another time on an in route, Clinton-Dix is actually getting to the spot. He's jumping that route. He knows exactly where Mike Evans is going. And in both of those instances, that coverage, that safety help, and his anticipation of what the route was that was coming at him was a big reason for the sack happening. So I just wanted to point that out, and if fans want to go on the website and check it out as well, HaHa Clinton-Dix wasn't just blowing smoke last week when he was talking about, you know, what he's seeing and how he's reacting to things out on the field. I think it's worth pointing out that that there's some credence to his words.
Yeah, and that's the thing too to keep in mind with the safety position. It's one of the reasons why I said it's really been always tough for me to just judge it and grade it and make those assumptions, because it is those type of plays when the ball isn't going that direction. You don't hear anything about Devon House or HaHa Clinton-Dix. They're just doing their job, and you're moving on to the next play. And also, I just want to point out, that's why it's really important for the Packers during this final stretch of the season, depending on how they want to use those cornerbacks, to be able to have more of that two-shell coverage, allowing Morgan Burnett and HaHa Clinton-Dix to do those type of things. Burnett, when he's back there, I should say, as opposed to, you know, roaming in the box as he also does. Because that's really where you gain, I think, the ultimate advantage, being able to use their skills, their anticipation, and overall just their intelligence to make things difficult on the opposing quarterback.
Yeah, well, we'll see if that Packers pass rush in combination with the coverage, if they can keep this sack roll going. You mentioned Joe Thomas, obviously not there at left tackle for the Cleveland Browns, and disappointing in a sense with him being Wisconsin native, a Wisconsin Badger. Here's a game against the Packers, and that 10,000-plus snap streak has been snapped. Still, I think, just a remarkable record.
Yeah, we won't get Joe Thomas versus Joe Thomas either from the Packers. That's too bad.
Yeah, that's too bad. But with that, we've got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. See you next time.